Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. Behind the curtain. Behind the curtain.
This is Behind the Curtain, and I'm Matt Schulte. Each episode, I have a conversation with someone in the world of storytelling. As I develop my own story, called The True History of Oz, I have two goals: to learn as much as I can about storytelling, and to share those learnings with other storytellers, no matter the medium they work in.
So one of the reasons why I wanted to talk to you was not just because we're working on a project together, but one of the reasons why we're working on it is you've had a lot of experience with trying to tell stories about a story.
Basically, yeah, which, that's true.
Right, that's kind of marketing, and you really can't, for the last 5 years or so, you can't read anything about how to market where somebody doesn't say, well, it's really storytelling. Like, you need the data to, like, know what's working, but if you don't have the bigger picture and story in mind, all the data in the world's probably not going to help.
Our guest today is Sophia Miller, an expert in brand strategy and digital content creation in tech and gaming.
So I wondered if you could tell me maybe just a little bit about, like, when you are working with a story, or someone hires you to help with a game, like, where do you start to figure out, how do you start to figure out what the bigger story is? Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, when it comes to games, but I think this is true about really anything, the first thing that I do is I play the game, or I, you know, use a product, I watch the movie, whatever it is that I'm doing, I experience it, because I want to go into it, you know, with the same thing that whatever community that you're building, whatever community you're telling this story to, I want to experience what they're experiencing. And you know, keep in mind the, like, journey that I am going through, what stands out to me about the game, and then also what stands out to me about the creator of the game, you know, like,
right,
maybe this person has, like, a very specific reason why they created this specific game. You know, I want to get into their mindset and understand why it interests them. Because, like you just said, you know, if you create something that you like, there will definitely be at least one other person who likes it too, but probably more than one.
Yeah, what you hope, anyway.
And so I think going through that journey, getting to know the creator, those are the things that kind of create the story. One thing that I always kind of look back on is the Nintendo Switch. When the Nintendo Switch came out, you know, it wasn't as powerful as a PlayStation or an Xbox,
right,
but it had a different, unique selling point. The thing about it that made it maybe not as powerful or not as good as these other consoles made it better in this other way, which is that you can bring it with you wherever you go. You can really easily play with your friends. You can play while you're traveling. But then when you go home, you can plug it into your TV as well. And so that, like, unique thing that maybe you could look at it and see a negative, you can turn that actually into a positive and say, actually, there's a story around why I made this. So I think those are the things that I really look at when creating a story about a story.
Yeah. So do you ever, I think one of the things that I do a lot when I'm working with other storytellers is sometimes they'll tell me their thing or their project or whatever, and after thinking about it, sometimes I'll go, oh, here's the interesting thing about that. Like, I'll find some little detail. And I would say half of the time, maybe, this completely anecdotal guess, the creator or writer or whoever goes, oh, I never thought of that. And mm-hmm. to me, sometimes it seems like, well, that really? You know, and not a bad thing, but so I wondered if you experienced that too, like when you're working with other creators or game developers or writers where you say, I think here's the story, and they're just like, wow, really?
I mean, when I worked, so I was working at a toy company that also made board games and outdoor games as well. And it was interesting because I made a TikTok account for the company. They didn't have one, and I was like, what are we doing here? Why don't we have a TikTok? And, you know, there are all these different toys that, you know, we had available. And I was, you know, just like, the thing that I did was just go and watch a bunch of TikToks. Like, I spent a lot of time just on TikTok, seeing, you know, what was there, what was going viral. And then I was like, you know what? One thing about TikTok is that the people there really want to see something genuine and authentic. They don't want to see like really big polished things. And so, and sometimes they do, right? It can still work out, but particularly in the space that I was kind of working within, a lot of people just, they wanted to just have fun and like experiment with new things, you know? And especially kind of in the beginning of when TikTok was getting really popular, it was kind of this like Instagram, but without the polish, you know? Yeah. People were kind of tired of everything being super curated on Instagram. And so I just started playing with the toys and filming myself playing with them and, you know, doing like oddly satisfying TikToks and things like that. People were looking for some comfort as well, like during the pandemic. And so I was just posting them. And then one of those TikToks got 8 million views. Right. And so, and no one expected that. No one expected that to happen. No one thought like, oh, why don't you just like post a video of you playing with the toy?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that has happened where it's like, you know, no one expects this thing to like get really popular. They're maybe expecting something else to get really popular, something that they put a ton of effort into. But sometimes it's just, you know, you and the first thing that comes to mind, because that's what's authentically you.
Yeah. You know, sometimes like in the movie biz, it's super common that a songwriter or musician, band, whatever, they'll record a demo of a tune. Mm-hmm. And then they'll go, oh, that's great. We should go in the studio and do a really nice version of that. And then they go into the studio and they do a great expensive version and it doesn't sound nearly as cool as the demo. You know, because the demo captured that, you know, initial just essence of the thing, you know, so the polish sometimes just it's money down the drain, you know, kind of. Do you think TikTok's any, because I'm not a super experienced TikTok maker or user, although I've had it for a while and I, you know, I check it out. But do you think, Or what do you think the differences are on TikTok now compared to even like a year ago? Because to me, it seems different, but does it to you?
Yeah, it does seem different to me now than it was a year ago, 2 years ago, 5 years ago.
Yeah.
I guess a while ago, it was Musical.ly even.
Right, yeah, I remember, yeah.
Yeah, I think, you know, TikTok is, you know, somewhat new. I mean, I guess it's not really new anymore, but they're definitely, you know, like trying different things with the algorithm and trying different things with, you know, like searchability, like how are you able to find something? And I think, you know, one of the things that people kind of do a lot with social media, especially when they're kind of first starting out, is they're trying to game the system.
Yeah.
They're, you know, let me see if I can make the shortest video possible so that I can get a bunch of views on it all at once because people are accidentally watching it over and over and over.
Ah.
Or they're like, well, I'm going to do 30 hashtags so that someone inevitably has to find it. But now TikTok is, now TikTok is rewarding people whose videos are being watched how it was found. So if you do a bunch of hashtags, for example, and some of them are relevant and some of them are not as relevant, or people are watching it when they click one hashtag but not another, it's actually not going to put it out as far as if you had just put like three really good hashtags where people are going to that hashtag and then watching your video. It really wants you to really create content directly intended for your audience and not just, you know, oh, I'm just going to make this and try to get a bunch of views
and
on
try
it.
And game it like every other platform folks do. One of the things that's interesting about that to me is how much of a, and my question is going to be about TikTok, but like other platforms, it's really a black box. Like with Facebook, they'll change their algorithm and then everybody's just like, oh, or Google, they change their algorithm and then you're like, okay, they changed it, but what did they do? And like, how do we, now we got to figure this out. And like, is TikTok more transparent like that? Or is there more tools to figure that out? Or is it still just like, oh, something's changed, let's see if we can figure it out. And then eventually some folks will go, I think it might be this. And then do you know?
So I don't know exactly what's going on internally at TikTok, but what I do know is that, you know, they have a creator program. They have like different programs where they can kind of go to their creators and they're like, hey, we're going to try this out. And we want you guys to try it out since you're already successful on TikTok and, you know, show people how it's done. And so, and there are a ton of creators on TikTok whose sole purpose is to figure out how the algorithm works and let you know. So like, for example, recently, or within the last like year or two, they started doing more horizontal videos instead of vertical videos. They were like, you know what, try this. We're going to start allowing more horizontal videos. And, you know, we're going to start doing longer videos. So you can do a 10-minute video now.
Right.
Because, like, you know, people kind of go through these phases of, you know, wanting to watch something short, 6 seconds, you know, Vine versus going on YouTube and watching these huge, long, like documentary style videos that creators are making there. But kind of going back to your previous question about like how much has TikTok changed, while they're constantly trying out new things, I will say that the one thing that they make sure to stick to no matter what is that original, like what the community wanted, which was really genuine, authentic content. And I think that all the changes they've made are just to keep boosting that main thing, which, you know, their own story, where TikTok is this place where you can find authenticity and originality.
Yeah. Do you think, you know, after TikTok, I mean, it's so influential in so many areas now. And the other platforms definitely, you know, they're like, oh, we got to compete. And then they try to compete really just kind of based on format. Like YouTube's like, well, wait, actually we have shorts, you know, and Instagram stories or whatever. And do you, I don't perceive that the same sort of premium on authenticity is the same on YouTube and Instagram and other platforms that is as it seems to still be on TikTok. Do you think that's accurate?
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, I think, again, like on Instagram, you know, having that polished, you know, very aesthetically pleasing thing is like still kind of paramount at Instagram, even if you're, if you still have that format of a TikTok, you know, turned into a reel on Instagram. And on YouTube, YouTube is interesting because I think, I feel like YouTube is a bit more free. Like you find what you want, whether it's polished or whether it's, you know, just kind of on the go content. You know, people love people love vlogs, people love gameplay videos, people love skits, people love, you know, whatever it is, documentaries. And they go to YouTube and they find the creators that they want there. And I think also like thinking of YouTube as a search engine, since it is owned by Google, is really helpful as well.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's true. YouTube's so massive, it's the spread of it, you know, like you were saying, like there's so many different, nobody that's posting to YouTube necessarily feels like they're locked into a particular format, you know, or a community. It's so huge, you know, that you can, it's kind of do whatever, right?
It is so big.
So on the true history of Oz, you know, we're trying to think about like content strategies and you know, what should go on what platform. And do you think that there's, I assume there is, but do you think that there's like best practices for content strategy for our project that are pretty applicable past try to be authentic? You know, like, is it, like, what would number two and number three be if you were advising, as you are with me, on true history? If you could summarize like the next, and also think about this.
Yeah, I mean, like one thing that I always say to people when I'm doing research into a project is I go, like, first off, I try to make things that are really engaging, like encourage people to engage with me, encourage them to ask questions, to comment, whether it's positive or negative. Like, I mean, I try to make sure that I'm keeping positive communities, but also allow people the space to be critical if they need to be. Because when you get, like, in addition to you being authentic, when they feel that they get the space to be authentic, you can see exactly what it is that they want from you. So I always like go into YouTube comments, which a lot of people are afraid of, but you know, I think you can kind of get through the weeds and you can find, you know, you can translate, like, what is it that this person is really saying? You know, there's maybe they're saying something super nice to you, but they're telling you like what it is that they like, what they want more of. Maybe there's someone who's kind of being negative, but you can kind of translate that into, you know what, this person just needs more information about this, or this person just wants more of this. And then I think you can create content that's specific to that, you know, really aimed at exactly what your community is asking for, whether they realize they're asking for it or not.
Yeah, I think that that's a great point, because I think that you can't talk to anybody that's trying to do marketing in this space or whatever, or be like influencer or whatever. Everybody says create engaging content. It's like, well,
right,
okay. But I don't think I've ever heard anybody say, it's like, engage and then encourage. Like, I think that's a great point, right? And it turns it way more into, like, if you're explicitly encouraging people to, like, what do you think? Or, like, let me know, or, like, do whatever, you know? It really fortifies the notion that this is a two-way thing,
Yeah,
You know, and I think
exactly.
like people of my generation and probably a couple behind me definitely, you know, thinking about it, everything as a two-way, it's kind of an old school thing, and it's also something that, you know, younger generations just do right out of the gate. But it's still important to let people know that, like, the megaphone's not the best way to go about it. It's a two-way thing. Even if you, even if it is a megaphone, you need to, you know, provide space for that two-way conversation, or,
yeah.
or always with one. You know?
Yeah, I would much rather have an audience that's small, but I know that they're all going to buy my product, than
totally.
Have this huge audience where everyone's watching my videos, but nobody cares about the actual like game that I'm making.
It is exactly where I think all of media is heading, where, you know, mainstream media is just fallen to pieces, you know, and in every industry. The film business, the music business, you know, big media, it's all going to go the way of, like, I would rather have, like, I would personally rather follow 10 people with really interesting ideas that may have a small audience that I'm part of than, like, these giant fucking things who don't even care or know who you or I are.
Yeah.
Am. You know?
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, I've, you know, now that you're saying it, I've noticed that, like, the people that I've been following are people who maybe not everyone has heard of, but that, you know, I feel like we have a better connection. And, you know, I think also part of that is like inclusivity and accessibility.
Yeah.
And not being afraid to cater to, like while being inclusive and accessible, like also catering to like a niche audience, you
totally.
Know,
yeah.
saying like, this is the person that's going to be interested in this, you know, and that's okay. And while you do that, other people who may not have been interested originally might get into it because their friend is really interested and wanted to show them. And now they're part of that audience too. And that's part of the inclusivity and accessibility part, where you're still allowing anyone who wants to be involved to be involved and making sure that they feel included.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah. Trying to be everything to everybody. It's just not going to be a good strategy. Going
yeah.
forward. But that's been the strategy for most media for a very long time.
Yeah.
So thanks, Sophia, for this conversation. We're out of time. But I appreciate
right.
it.
And that's the show. Thanks for listening. This has been episode number 2, and my guest was Sophia Miller.